Blog Talk Radio.
Oh,
fuera.
I'm back. You're with Dr. Harris, Dr. Floyd D. Harris Jr. Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter Show. We're broadcasting here from Fresno, Mississippi, Fresno, as I call Fresno, California. Those of you know that I have not been on the air for a while. I've been sick, just getting over a sickness. Getting my strip back, but I'm glad to be on the air tonight. I could not miss tonight, even if I was sick, because of the tragic situation that has occurred in Sacramento, California. Now I believe I can call Sacramento, Mississippi, Sacramento now. You know, I really want to give this show some framework. I'm really trying to process this shooting that took place in Sacramento, California, over a year ago. I did have an opportunity to meet Stephen's brother, who was a young man who was advocating for his brother who was lynched and murdered. which I will call a 21st century lynching, of being shot in his grandmother's backyard. And saying that, I played the Public Enemy video, Fight the Power, which if you don't get it now, you never will understand that you're fighting those in power. And then also I played the video footage of the that took place. I'm going to go ahead and continue to play the footage, but I'm going to go ahead and mute it so that those of you who are just now coming in, I'll be playing this video throughout the entire show tonight. But to give some framework on this shooting here, there was alleged young man, Stephon Clark, who was reported breaking into cars, which we found out that wasn't true. And then these police officers followed this brother through some backyards and then came in contact with him. And I guess he feared for his life, knowing the history of police in America. He started running to his grandmother's home. The police officers had their weapons pulled at the time as they were chasing him. You can see in the video the police officers shot over 20-plus times at Stephon Clark in his grandmother's backyard. From that standpoint, Stephon Clark was hit multiple times by these assassin police, Sacramento, I will call them assassin police. And then once they shoot over 20-plus times, they're like hiding behind, you can see right here behind the shed here, while Stephon Clark is over here laying down with 20-plus bullets in him behind his grandmother's home. And the cops are there asking each other, are they okay, and what have you. Now the cops are calling for backup. Now, note during this whole time that the police officers have the helicopter, which is following Stephon, which now have infrared of the body heat running to his grandmother's home. At that point, the body cams of the police officers are recording everything that is taking place from start to finish. This is one of the reasons why myself, Gloria Hernandez, you really need to understand, for the past 25 years in Fresno, we are the ones who advocated for and pushed our police department to get cameras on them. Not to say now that the police have gotten smart to where, or clever, where they can cut the cameras off when they want to. You see now the police officers are now, you see the cell phone, a quick glimpse of the cell phone of Stephon Clark there. No weapon at all is found. All it was a cell phone. We are right now, folk, in a situation in America where it doesn't matter if you have a gun, you have a donut, you have a black pair of socks, you could have a pencil, a pen. It doesn't matter. The rules does not apply to black people I would say black and brown, but people of color. But right now we're talking about Stephon Clark, who is a African-American black man here in America. Now, I want you to understand that some of you who are may say, well, all they have to do is stop. You know, all they have to do is stop. You know, we always supposed to do what the police officers tell us to do. So if the police officer says stop, you stop. Police officer says stand on your head, you stand on your head. But we don't understand that the rules in America under the Constitution are supposed to be fair, supposed to be not biased here in America when it comes to the judicial system, which we all know that the kangaroo court system hangs Negroes and black and brown folk. But going back to the shooting, what is interesting to me is that the DA decided that under their investigation that they were going to not prosecute the police officers who alleged killed this young man unjustly. The young man, again, all he had was a cell phone. So tonight, those of you who are in Fresno, maybe you can go to live stream or internet or whatever. Channel 24 interviewed me this evening in regards to what took place in Sacramento for the verdict and what have you. And I explained to the news people that what happened in Sacramento is something that happens in Fresno daily. You give our children hot dogs in a bounce house at the age of 5 and 6 years old, and then you turn around and you shoot them in the back at the age of 15 years old. The question that that bothers me is that, you know, when is enough enough? I guess maybe that's a dumb question. When is enough enough, right? You know, so let's turn the scenario around for a second, for a second. Let's say that this were two black police officers who was chasing a white, wealthy white kid in the rich community, and the two black police officers did the same action as the two white police officers with Stephon Clark, probably in not a wealthy community. What would the scenario be? Would the scenario be the same? Would the scenario be that it was okay for two black police officers to run and shoot and unload their gun no more than 15 feet away? Is that acceptable? He sees the body of Stephon Clark right there, and the two officers over here maybe 10 or 20 feet away. And, you know, it's just interesting to me that we're paying to be killed. We're paying to be murdered. We're paying this as taxpayers here in this country. Now, what happened in Sacramento is not an isolated situation. This is happening all over the country. All over the country. Sandra Bland, you know, she got messed over. Oscar Grant, he got it. You know, the list of names just go on and on and on and on and on. And, you know, it's going to come a time right now where we, as black people, right, is going to have to start taking this more serious now. You know, these cops don't even live in our neighborhood, okay? They just come and suck the wealth out of our neighborhood. If they do come in our neighborhood, it's for two reasons. Number one, we all know that all cops are not good cops. I believe, I would have to believe, that there are cops who wake up in the morning want to do a good job. I will want to have to believe that. Second, number two, we do have cops who abuse their you'll see the cell phone right there getting ready to flash. As soon as he turns stuff on, you'll see the cell phone. Right there. There's a cell phone right there. Okay. And if you do see these cops, mainly white cops that come in our neighborhood, they're buying property. They're buying our homes and our hood. So those are really the only three reasons other than maybe planting some type of dope or something on our kids in the community. Which you say, well, Harris, that's pretty drastic for you to say. Yeah, it is drastic because it is what happens here in Fresno. And it happens all over the country where we have cops planting stuff on our children and our community. And it's like, you know, this was a modern day 21st century lynching. This is no different what happened to our ancestors back in the day. Okay, so let's get this straight. And it's time that we step up. I didn't say step back. I said step up. And to hold people accountable. You know, on the radio, on the TV station today, I'd like to thank all those who are tuning in right now. Again, I'm back on the air. I apologize. I've been a little under the weather, and so I'm back now. Dr. Harris is back. We're talking about Stephon Clark, the verdict that was given that these two rogue lynch mob cops who murdered our brother in Sacramento, California, unloaded. Look at the number over there. Look at this number here is an indication how many times they shot. I want to replay that. I want you to look over here. Those are the numbers, 8, 9, 10, 15, 16, 20. They unloaded 20 bullets into this young man. 20 bullets. I want to show that again. I want you to look at the number over there. 20 bullets that they shot within... Yeah. I'm going to turn it up so you can actually hear the bullets. Now, what's interesting is these two police officers who are supposed to be trained from the academy is asking someone they just shot 20-something times to show your hands. Mm. I mean, and then the other cop is telling another cop to reload. I mean, this is bombastic. This could have been your son, and I know people have lost their children just like this. And you see the two cops on the side still pointing their guns at someone that is just shot 20-something times saying, show your hands. I mean, I mean, is this what we're teaching at the police academy? Mm-hmm. You know?
Reverend Harris, I mean, can I ask a question?
Yeah, okay, we have a caller online. I'm going to try to put the caller in. I usually do this from the board, but when the weather is bad, it, I don't know what happens, but I'm going to try to put the caller in. So everybody just hold on. We're having a good discussion right now. I want to see if there's anybody on the board who may want to call
5172,
in.
5172.
Okay, 5172. There you go, 5172. Go ahead and talk to us. Welcome to Dr. Harris' Black Lives Matter Show.
Thank you, Reverend Harris. I just want to ask a question in response to what you were just saying about the police academy. Do you think that it would make a difference if these police officers had to be recertified every year. I mean, we have to get a driver's license every 4 years to be able to legally operate a car. So I'm wondering why these police officers go through the academy, get certified to carry a firearm, and then that's it. And then nobody else is checking on them because, you know, they're killing indiscriminately in our or discriminately in our neighborhoods, and nobody is saying, people in authority not saying a mumbling word. I just wanted to ask that question, if they should be recertified yearly or every 2 years. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I think that's a good question. I mean, you know, when I was on the Fresno Police Advisory Board, you know, Chief Dyer, who's probably been one of the worst police chiefs that we've had in the history of Fresno County under his policy, and all the bad things of under his watch that has taken place. You know, police officers say, oh, well, you know, we have, you know, people come in and talk to them about mental health, and we have people come in and recertify them. We, you know, send them to the shooting range, and we, you know, otherworldly, tell us that he's being proactive, you know. But I really feel it needs to go further than that. I think that this – so let me just say this. Let me just put this framework out there right now. How many people – and I know I can't see the hands of people, but how many people actually know where police – the word police come from? How many of you out there listening, live streaming, radio land, worldwide, do you know where the policing come from? I mean, just ask yourself, yes, I do, no, I don't. Because I'm going to educate you either way. The word police came from slavery. Now, I want our caller, who is very historian when it comes to Black history, to chime in on anything if I'm saying or I'm misleading or anything. There was something called slave patrol.
That's true.
So I want you to understand that the police department, the whole ideology and the philosophy of policing in America came from slavery. Now, how many of you knew that? Since many of you think that the police department is just such a great, great thing, let's talk about historically where it came from. It came from slavery. And so the mindset of slave patrol was to go out and catch those runaway slaves who that the plantation master felt that was being disgruntled, not listening. And so they would go out and they would get the bloodhounds. Bloodhounds are dogs, which now today they call them canine. They would go out and they would take the scent of a slave shirt, and they would put it on the greyhound, the dog nose, and let them smell it. And they would let the greyhound loose out in the woods to go out and chase and find the slave. Once they would find the slave, they would bring the slave back to the plantation and make an example out of the slave. This is where policing came from here in America. And then from there, the only way that the slaves could get away from the police or from the bloodhounds was that the slaves would have to go and jump in a river or a lake, and they would take some type of straw, and they would go up under the water and take the straw where they could breathe up under the water, and the bloodhounds couldn't smell the scent. And that's how our ancestors got away from the slaves. So let's bring it back to the 21st century, 2019. the same, the same, the same philosophy is here today. It's not called slave patrol, but it's called community policing. That's what it's called. See, what's interesting to me, Sister Eileen, is that nobody cares until their kid gets shot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate that we have people like that today that think, oh, well, it's not my kid. Oh, he must have did something wrong. No, you don't have to do anything wrong to be shot, murdered, and killed in America.
That's true. That's true.
Oscar Grant was murdered cold blood in Oakland, California, turned over and shot.
Yeah. Tamir Rice, Mike Brown, Eric Garner, Sandra Bland. Yes. Yes. But these are the vestiges, Reverend, I think, of slavery. This fear that black people have of speaking out against the power structure. But the thing is that if we don't resist and we acquiesce, we're going to be right back on the plantation in the 21st century. And that plantation thinking is not going to get any of us anywhere but dead, more than we already are. More than we already are. And people have to understand that in America right now, we are marching towards a fascist regime in this country. The reason that our president is working so hard to distract us with all this hate talk, all this criminal behavior, is to distract us from what's happening, that our democracy is crumbling. And in order to do that, you have to have a police force and a military force that's willing and able to kill people on a regular basis and not have to answer for it. So,
well, you know,
is it important enough for us to? Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rev.
No, I was saying, you know, we just want to show appreciation to all of those who are watching the show tonight. I'm intentionally live streaming the lynching murder of Stephon Clark. Today, I was being interviewed by Channel 24. Those of you, I did live stream a little bit of it. I don't know if they're going to play any of it tonight on TV, because I came very potent, and I came very strong, and I came very hard. And, you know, it's interesting to me that we still sing We Shall Overcome, the song that Dr. King made in the 60s. For a purpose and a reason. Here it is, 2019. We still singing We Shall Overcome, and we're still being gunned down and murdered in the streets, and our brother running down the gutters of America. But we still sing We Shall Overcome. It's sad that we don't care, we don't get involved until it's my son or my daughter. You shouldn't be like that, folks. You should be someone who cares about humanity, period, okay? And what I told him today during the interview was that I said, you know, I said, Dr. King is rolling over in his grave right now, rolling over in his grave right now, just irritated with the behavior of black people in this country. I marched, I protested, I went into just about every city across the country, and this is what you all do today. You don't come together, you're divided. And I sat there and put my life on the line for all of you today in the 21st century. And all you do is sit here and argue with one another, dick and grime and bitch with one another and fight and all this type of stuff. It makes no sense. It just makes no sense. And here we are paying to be killed. We're paying for it. And I told the people, the newscaster, I mean, well, what do you think? I said, what I think is, Malcolm X said it best, it's the ballot of the bullet.
That's right.
Until our people understand that the power in voting and start getting DAs and district attorneys in office that's going to worry about justice and not their own political career, then we will have change. Marching is not going to do it. Protesting is not going to do it. Protesting and marching has its way. It's for a reason. But real change comes in the ballot booth when it's time to vote.
That's right. That's right.
Period.
That's right.
Take it to the bank.
Preach.
I don't care if you like it or not.
Preach, Rev.
Because if we have people who are voting in the community, then we will vote district attorney there that's for the people, but not for their own political career.
Yes.
So now you're going to tell me if he had a donut, if Stephon Clark had a donut, it would be adjustable shooting. If he would have had a black sock in his hand, it would have been justified.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm trying
to find
out where the real men at in the community. How do we just sit and allow this to go on and just sit back and say nothing and do nothing? Mm-hmm. This was a 21st century lynching right on the soil of America.
That's right. What would Huey say? What would Stokely Carmichael say? Kwame Ture? What would Eldridge Cleaver say? What would Bobby Hutton say? What would Fred Hampton say? I mean, what would these people say who have died for black liberation? What would they say? They wouldn't be saying a lot. They'd be out there doing what they needed to do. We can't let these people have died in vain. We are obligated as African Americans, as part of the African diaspora, to resist and to fight for justice and freedom. And there are enough of us in this valley who are black and brown, working together as allies to get some stuff done, but we have got to get to the ballot box. This fear, this plantation thinking has got to stop. I mean, this is how 5 to 10% of the Caucasian race runs the world. I'm talking globally. They run the world when they are in the minority numerically. How is that? That is plantation thinking, Reverend. And until there's some changes being made, what is it going to take for the tipping point to happen? What's it going to take? In the 60s, it took, John F. Kennedy getting killed, his brother Bobby getting killed. It took Martin Luther King getting killed for LBJ to sign off on the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And then the Voting Rights Act. So we got the Voting Rights Act. They've been trying to dismantle that. That's why we got all this voter suppression. If there was no threat, why would people be trying to suppress our votes if we were not a threat?
You know, this evening I had dinner with Brother Tyenden, and we go into some very deep discussion. I was actually being interviewed while we were having dinner. So I have to excuse myself for about 5 minutes. And when I came back, we got into a very deep, deep conversation about black folk. And I told Kanye, I said, you know, we're in very desperate, bad shape right now as black people here in Fresno mainly, but across the country. And I told him, I said, you know, I said, I need to ask you a question, kind of. And he said, yeah. I said, isn't it true? And I said, if I'm wrong, please correct me. I said, isn't it true that black people are the only people, the only race of people in humanity in America had to get a Voting Rights Act bill for us to vote? And everyone else is just automatic. And you know what his answer was?
Mm-mm.
He said, you're correct.
Whoa.
He said, we are the only people that are voting right. Dr. King had to negotiate with President Lyndon Johnson in 63, one of them years, for black people to vote. You have Asians come here. They don't need a civil rights bill to vote. You have Arabs come here. They don't need a civil rights vote bill. You have a Latino family. We're the only race of people.
The only reason.
I mean, you have the Arabs who come here from other countries building their mosques. They don't even have to have a Voting Rights Act bill. We're the only people.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We've always been special to America. You know, we've always been special to America, and that is why, after everything that they've done to us as Africans, they refuse to pay reparations. And why do they refuse? Because they know they're wrong. But this killing of black people that continues, Reverend, now what are they doing in the Midwest and in Chicago? Now they're killing black young people and harvesting their organs. Harvesting their organs. So we got the police killing on one hand. We've got police brutality in our neighborhoods. Now we've got young people being killed for their organs. We got 65,000 black women and girls missing, and this is not considered a crisis. So black lives still do not matter in this country. And why is it that black people are not out in the streets angry, demanding change, not just to be protesting, because that's the whole problem now in the Central Valley, that we're a toothless threat. We're a toothless threat.
We'd like to thank those who are tuning in to the Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter show. I've been off the air for about a week and a half or so. I was under the weather. We're coming back strong, getting my strength back. We're here talking about the Stephon Clark shooting, that the verdict that the DA in Sacramento, California, said that these two officers, rogue cops, are set free. They're not going to press any charges against these two officers who shot an unarmed black man holding a cell phone in his hand. The DA of Sacramento County said that the evidence, it was a mistake. So let me just put it in street terms. It was a mistake. It was a mistake for us to kill him, but he's dead. There's no accountability. There's no accountability when it comes to black life right now, and I believe that we all need to understand that we're all, and let me just put this out there to all of you right now who are listening live stream and on radio land across the world. The black man in America is a danger in specie. Okay, I really want you to understand what I'm saying. The black man and woman, but I want to say the black man first, and woman are a danger of species here in this country. So all of you who have young black sons and grandsons and nephews,
mm-hmm.
it's not guaranteed they're going to come back home, not in this country, because the color of their skin will get them killed and murdered. Look at Trayvon Martin. Look at him. He was in a gated community and still got murdered. Stephon Clark wasn't even in a gated community. He was in his grandmother's backyard and got killed. Still no accountability. But let you shoot somebody like these cops did. Oh, you get the death chamber. Oh, it's black on black crime. Well, what do you call this?
Mm-hmm. Blue on black crime.
See? Because every... Let me tell everybody some of this. Those who don't know me, that I'm an international civil rights leader. I founded National Network in Action here. I used to be... I used to be under Reverend Al Sharpton for about 10 years. I was a local president, and he appointed me to state president for 10 years, and I branched away on my own. There was a shooting that took place in Madera, California. I believe his name was Alvarez. I think I have his name right. But go to Google and look up Reverend Harris National Action Network in Madera, California, and just read about that case. I led a march from his house to the police department, which was probably about maybe a five-mile march. Probably had about 100 people behind me marching, shutting down streets. But let me just tell you the story of this. See, these DAs is really a joke because it's all about politics. It's not about you. It's never have been about you. So don't think it's about you. It's about politicians' political careers, right? Because before I say this, the Attorney General of California stated that the police unions gave him a bunch of money to run for office. Now, do you really think he's going to file charges against this police officer when the union has given him thousands and thousands of dollars? See, this is the payoff.
That's right.
To sell you out. So
we got to take the money out of these politicians.
I'm a preacher to say what you're scared to say because I'm a free man. I'm a free black man. Nobody pays me anything. I pay my own way. So that's why I can say what I say and do what I do because I'm not attached to nobody. Nobody controls me but my creator. Nobody controls my mouth but the creator.
Mm-hmm.
But here in Madera, California, where we had a police officer who had apprehended a young man and then she handcuffed him and placed him back in the police car. And then my understanding that he was kicking the door or something. Now, this is Madera, California, which is 20 miles from Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
The police officer then had him hogtied.
Mm.
She pulled out her, she thought she pulled out her taser. Now, he's in the back of the police car handcuffed. Can't get out if anybody have any knowledge about police car. There's no door handles on the inside. So he's kicking the door. She pulls out her, she thought her taser, but she pulled out her Glock and shot him right through the heart. But the story gets more interesting now. You're like, oh, man, that's wrong. She can't, you know, pull out her Glock and shoot him, and he's in back to the police car handcuffed? Really? You really think that? Well, let me tell you the rest of the story. She thought she pulled her taser. She pulled her Glock and shot that young man in the heart and killed him right on the spot. And do you know that the Madera District Attorney's found some civil law in California that said it was a mistake?
Mm-hmm.
It was a mistake. She didn't mean to do it.
Right. Right. But, Reverend Harris, should not police officers, much like doctors, be held to a higher standard of care when doing their job, not a lower standard, because they are trained they should be held to a higher standard of care. But as you pointed out, the police lobbies and the police unions don't want that to change. And it must be said, too, that a lot of these police officers go from department to department. They leave one department under a cloud, and they go someplace else, and they get hired, and they're right back to doing the same thing that they left the other department for. Or they come from the military with their militaristic worldviews, a lot of them, not all of them, racist, white nationalists, KKK, neo-Nazi point of view, and they get hired by the police departments to patrol our neighborhoods to keep us, safe. So what do we expect? I remember a time when the talk was, well, we need more black and brown police officers. We need more, you know, in this area, Hmong police officers. A black police officer can kill another black person just as quick because he's been indoctrinated. When he puts on that uniform, he's been indoctrinated.
This is why, Sister Allen, you're in Oakland, California, I believe, in the late 60s or early 70s. Mm-hmm. And you remember the Black Panther Party that policed their own community?
Yes,
why do you think that the Black Panther Party policed their own community? So that we wouldn't have silliness like this going on. But we're so afraid today that we can't even police our own front door of our house because we're so scary. That's why the police, the Black Panthers, were policing their own community. Because
yes,
they knew
they
that the white cops was going to come and murder the people in the community.
I asked for
20 strong, not scared black men to come to a breakfast so that we could sit down and talk and have a conversation about us. Out of 20 men that I asked to come, I only got two.
Yes.
See, we have a problem as black. See, we have to stop blaming white people now for our. They have a role in it. Believe me, they do.
Right now,
there's a lot that I have to put on black people now. Because we're jealous of one another. We're envy of one another. We don't want to support each other. We want to talk about one another.
Want to hold on to whatever job they got with no flack being given?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We want to sell out one another? I mean, we as black people have a real problem right now. And I'm not going to allow black people to keep blaming white people for their mishaps.
Nope.
Yes,
nope.
They have a role in it, but you have a bigger role and to be in a bigger person and support your brother and your sisters.
That's right. Tell it now.
We have a big internal mishap as a black community here in Fresno. I'm not going to talk about other places. I'm talking about Fresno, Mississippi, Fresno.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, this is why, you know, I want you to talk about the Black Summit a little bit. We're getting towards the end of the show. But can you tell those that's live streaming right now about the Black Summit that you're putting together? Because it's really important that I want folk to know and hear about the Black Summit that you have been working on so hard for the past couple of months. And can you talk about that before we go to the end of our show?
Sure. And thank you for the opportunity, Reverend Harris. We are putting together a group of us, what I hope it to be, the first progressive black summit of the Great Central Valley. And it's going to be a two-day affair that is happening this year, October 26th and 27th, which is a Saturday and a Sunday here in Fresno. And we have a keynote speaker to open up our summit. His name is James Bell. and he's the executive director of the W. Hayward Burns Institute in Oakland, California. And James is an expert in juvenile justice. In fact, he, when South Africa was turned into a democratic state, he was one of the people internationally that went and helped them write their juvenile justice laws. So the brother spent 25 years working for the Youth Law Center in San Francisco, and then he branched out and established the Burns Institute. So he's going to be our keynote speaker on the 26th. And we are going to have four panels. The first day, we're going to have panel A, which is mass incarceration and the disruption of the prison pipeline. And our second panel, panel B, that same day, is called Education in the Age of 45. And we're only having two panels that day, but we have some very excellent people on all of our panels. So the next day, we are going to have a community meal, and we're going to go on to panel C, which is called Black Business, Infrastructure, and Politics. And we have some very, very strong people, at least one person from Fresno Black Chamber, a young lady named Kaya Heron, and she's just dynamic. And we have a couple more people on that panel. And our last panel is called Mind, Body, Spirit, What Now for Black Progressives? And I'm happy to say that Reverend Harris is going to anchor that panel, and we have a couple more people who've decided that they're going to do it. And I'm really hoping that Sister Devoya Mayo from the Holistic Center is going to make that panel. She's a very strong sister who is one of the partners in the Holistic Center out there and an ambassador for African-Americans in that venue. So the whole purpose, Reverend Harris, for having this summit is to allow Black progressives in this valley, and we're talking the Great Central Valley from Stockton all the way to Bakersfield, to come together to not just complain and fuss about what the problems are in our communities, but to find solutions, progressive solutions. And the bottom line to this is something that you have been talking about this entire show, getting out the vote. People, everybody who's listening, if you are not registered to vote, if you have people in your family who are not registered to vote, register and get ready to vote. 2020 is around the corner. We have got to show up and show out in mass if we want things to get better. We've got to diffuse the political money and power that so many of these lobbies have, like the police unions and the police lobbies. We've got to fight that with sweat equity. We've got to fight that with people power. And so I hope all of you who are listening tonight will attend the Black Summit at the end of October, and get ready for Kwanzaa after that. Because remember, Black History Month should be 24/7, 365. So let's celebrate us and come together as brothers and sisters. Thank you, Reverend, for letting me share that. Appreciate it.
Well, there you have it. You have our own president of the West Fresno Democratic Club, Ms. Eileen Reed, who is speaking to us today. Just wanted to give a shout out to Portia and Sharon. Denise, can't see that name real good. Tamika, shout out to all of you. Like Maria, Julia, Maria, Sharon again,
cool.
Anya,
yeah.
Sister Helen, she's in Sacramento. Thank you for tuning in and all your different
thank
posts.
Thank you, sister.
Kevin Nutt, thank you for tuning in. Sharon again, Anthony again, like Major Senior, thank you for tuning in. Bradley Smith, thank you for tuning in. Bishop, thank you for tuning in. Harris, thank you. Mary, thank you for tuning in. I think that's my sister from Sacramento. I believe her son was shot and murdered.
All right.
Regina,
oh.
Thank you for tuning in. Heart of Men, thank you for tuning in. Shamika, thank you. Love you all. James Archie, I believe that's our pastor. Thank you for tuning in. Gregory. Oh, that's Bev Phil. Oh, bro, thank
okay.
you for tuning in. Greg
all
Price,
right,
thank
girl.
You, brother. Who is this? Denise. Ooh, I can't see Denise. Thank
Curry?
You for tuning in.
Okay.
Denise again. Ozell, Mount Pleasant, thank you for tuning in. Who is that? Phyllis, thank you for tuning in. Maria Ellis, thank you for tuning in. Didn't know you was on.
All right now.
Rod Johnson, thank you for tuning in, my brother.
Oh, brother Rod.
So we had a nice lineup tonight. Those who had tuned in. I'd just like for everyone to just say a prayer for all of the freedom fighters across the country, those who are still alive like myself, you know, still trying to fight the good fight, you know, Aline, you know, Maria, you know,
gotta fight
the folks
power,
in the
y'all.
Area, all the family
yeah.
down in Sacramento who was hurting right now for the decision that was made. We just
but
need to just really embrace one another, you know, and just tell each other that you love each other, because you don't know if tomorrow's promised for you. None of
that's
us,
right.
for that matter. My cousin Marcus, thank you, brother, cousin, for tuning in. You know, so everybody who knows me, I speak truth to power. You know, I'm unapologetic. You know, I just, that's all I know to do. To liberate our people, to educate our people, to mobilize our people, to organize our people, and take them to a higher level. And so right now, again, we just want to thank those ancestors for fighting a good fight. And thank all the Black Panther Party, those who are political prisoners right now, for standing, you know, and the sacrifice
yeah.
you gave. You know, you didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't have to fight those cops down in Oakland. You know, you could have laid down, you know, but you didn't. And we just want to just thank you for giving us an opportunity right now to pass the baton to us. And I tell you, I'm going to run with the baton. I ain't going to lay it down. I'm going to run with it. And for the next generation, I'm going to run for the next generation. And so right now we're going to go ahead and play one of our favorites here, Malcolm X, just a little bit of it, and then we're going to close our show out.
Thank you,
bro. Thank you, bro. There was three slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house. But next, they dressed pretty good. They should have got his food. But yet, they lived in the attic or the basement, but still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house other than the master would. The house Negro, the master said, we got a good house here. The house Negro said, yeah, we got a good house here. Whenever the master said, we say we. This house could have a house Negro. If the master's house caught on fire, the house Negro would fight harder to put the blaze out than the master would. If the master got sick, the house Negro would say, what's the matter, boss? I'm sick. Identified himself with his master, more than his master identified with himself. And if you came to the house and you and said, let's run away, let's separate, the house may brothers look at you and say, man, you're crazy. What do you mean you're separated? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this? There was that house, Negro. In those days, he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call it today, but we still got some house niggers running around here. This modern house Negro loves his master. He wants to live near him. To pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about I'm the only Negro out here. I'm the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school. You're nothing but a house Negro. And if someone comes to you right now and says, let's separate, it's for the same thing that the house Negro said. What you mean, separate? From America? This good white man? When you gonna get a better job than you can do? I mean, this is what you say. I ain't let nothing in Africa. This is what you say. Why should you show nothing in Africa? On that same plantation, there was a theater Negro. A theater Negro. Those were the masses. There was always more Negroes in the field than there was Negroes in the house. The Negro in the field called hell. He ate leftovers. And the house came high up on the hog. The Negro in the field didn't get nothing but what was left of the insides of the hog. They call them chitlins nowadays. In those days, they called them what they were, guts. That's what you were, a gutsman. And some of you all still gutsmen. The people make a little beat from morning to night. He lived in a shack, in a hut. He wore all cast off clothes. And he hated his master. I say he hated his master. He was intelligent. That house Negro loved his master. But that pure Negro, remember, they were in the majority. And they hated his master. When the house caught on fire, he didn't try and put it out. That people need to pray for a win. For a reason. When the master got sent to steal, they were praying that he died. If someone comes to the people, he goes and says, that's separate. He says, let's leave. He says, where are we going? He says, keep going. He says, get on the hill. That field Negroes in America today. I'm a field Negro. The masses are the field Negroes. When they see this man's house on fire, you don't hear little Negroes talk about how our government is in trouble. They say, the government is in trouble. The masses are Negro. Our government. The one connection to the place is our astronauts. Our Navy. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. That's a Negro that's out of his mind. Just as the slave master of that day. He was taught the house Negro to keep the field Negroes in check. The same old slave master today has Negroes who are nothing but modern Uncle Johns, 20th Uncle Johns, put under control, keep us passive and peaceful and nonviolent. That song making you nonviolent. It's like when you go to the dentist and the man is going to take your tooth. You're going to feel it when he starts putting. So these squibs and slip in your throat called Novocaine to make you think they're not doing anything to you. So you sit there and you've got all that Novocaine in your jaw, you suffer peacefully. All down the jaw, and you don't know what's happening because someone has taught you to suffer peacefully. The white man does the same thing to the industry. When you want to put nuts on your head and take advantage of you, and don't have to be afraid that you're fighting back. To keep you from fighting back, you get these old religious Uncle Tom's to teach you and me, so just like Lover King, suffer peacefully. Don't stop suffering, just suffer peacefully. And it's not your feet walking out, that's your blood flowing the streets. This is a shame. And you know, he's a Christian preacher. If it's a shame to him, you know what it is to me. One thing Revolution. It was against the Black Revolution. When Martin Luther King set up the decision over the civil struggle of America reached its low point. King became bankrupt almost as a leader, plus even financially. The Southern Christian leadership conference was in financial trouble. It was in trouble, period, with the people when they failed to desegregate Albany, Georgia. Other Negro Southern leaders of so-called national stature became fallen idols. When they became fallen idols, began to lose their prestige and influence, local Negro leaders began to strip the mess. Cambridge, Maryland, Julia Richardson, and Danville, Richard, Danville, another part of the country, they could sell us our people. This was not done by these Negroes on your stage. They controlled you, but they were in the center of the times. They controlled you, they kept you on the plantation. As soon as things fit, they can. Negroes to the streets. King got out and went out to California to a big rally and raised about $100,000. Coming to Detroit, he raised more than $1,000. And recall, right after that, Russians attacked King, accused King and the war of starting trouble everywhere and then making him raise the money to help. Instead of running to the King in court, raising all the money and not paying it back. This happened. I got it in the newspaper. Father's going to be taking Father's going to be taking And as these Negroes stand, begin to attack each other, they begin to look there at the Negro mass. And Negroes was out there in the streets. They were talking about the March on Washington.